Welcome back to Turning Hard Times into Good Times. I'm your host, Jay Taylor, and I'm really glad to have one of our favorite guests here on this show, one of our favorite corporate guests for sure, Dr. Quentin Henning, Chairman and President of Novo Resources. Novo Resources trades in the U.S. and in Canada. I picked it up in my newsletter at around 80 cents back in 2013. It reached $7 in U.S. money in the summer of 2017, currently selling it at about $1.78, 178 million shares, giving it a market cap of around U.S. $318 million. Thanks for joining me again, Quentin.
Absolutely, Jay.
Well, this is really an exciting story for sure, even though the share price is way down from its peak. The exploration activities that you have guided Novo through are focused on conglomerate beds, about a meter or two thick, and they're characterized by very coarse gold. Hard to measure it, for sure, as you've pointed out in the past. But while these beds are only about a meter or so thick, can you talk about the scale of these conglomerate beds throughout Western Australia, the scale of these projects that you are exploring?
Yes, very easily. So look, these are very old deposits. They're about 2.7 billion years old. But in spite of that, by and large, they're nearly flat lying. Okay, so they're not folded, they're not folded up and broken up and stuff. These are fairly continuous sheet-like deposits. I can, reference each of our projects and give people a sense of scale. So at Beaton's Creek, for example, the current resource underlays something like maybe 3.5 or 4 square kilometers, I believe, at present. It's open. We know it's open in all directions out into the basin. They're expansive. So at Karratha, we have about 8 kilometer strike. Again, we've explored roughly half of that 8 kilometers, and we know it's continuous there. At Egina, although we're exploring gravels that are derived from the conglomerates, these are modern gravels that have formed through erosion. We see the conglomerates up in the hills, and the conglomerates, they continue for many kilometers through that region. I would say they underlay tens if not hundreds of square kilometers throughout the Edgen area.
Yeah, so very massive. Over this massive discovery you've made, you've, as you mentioned, three major projects that you're working on, and you've decided, though, however, right now, to focus on Egina. Can you explain why you're focused on Egina, and maybe talk a little bit about the challenges that are unique to Egina and how you are looking to overcome those issues?
Yes, Egina, as I said, is derived from the conglomerate. So basically, what's happened, Mother Nature over the past few million years has eroded back the same conglomerate layer that we were chasing in hard rock, say at Karratha. But at Egina, the conglomerate has been broken up. Mother Nature remilled the rock, and in doing so, it freed up the gold nuggets, and those nuggets have been washed down into the gravels on the terrace below, which, is very expansive. It covers, hundreds and hundreds of square kilometers. We have something like 2,000 square kilometers of target area. What we're doing at Egina, because it is free dig, it's sitting basically right at surface, we see it as extremely low-hanging fruit. It is a gravel horizon, roughly a meter thick. We've demonstrated that through the recent trenching we've done, the bulk sampling. And now we have a very effective means of targeting it. So it's something we can move very quickly. All right. We see it as a project that can move forward, perhaps even towards production very, very quickly. We have support from Sumitomo in doing so. But more importantly, the aspects of the project that it's itself are what drive this thing. Free dig, loose gold. It's mostly coarse. We see processing techniques that can be employed. For instance, yesterday we announced some test work that we did on the eddy current separators, which shows extreme promise. So, this is a unique deposit, but we see an ability to move it forward very quickly.
Quentin, on August 22nd, you put out a press release announcing the recovery of 281.9 grams of gold from 292.38 cubic meters. Now, I know you have a lot more work to do. You talk about low-hanging fruit, which you just mentioned, and I know you have a lot more work to do before you can really officially talk about economics. But if there is continuity, and you're suggesting what I'm hearing you say, you believe there probably is, if there's continuity in those kind of grades over a large scale, on the face of it, do you think this makes economic sense? Do you think this can make money?
Yeah, absolutely. That's why we're driving it so hard. So the numbers you reference, they're flipped around. It was 292.38 grams gold from 281.92.
Okay, slightly more.
But that, no problem. Look, you know, more to the point, the gravels that we tested are at the edge of the mining lease. They're basically on the cusp of the terrace. You know, these gravels head down and become part of the broader terrace below. If people think of this as the headwaters of a much, much larger system, you know, think with fingers on a hand and the fingers, the individual fingers all kind of coalesce down into the terrace. We suspect that the terrace, areas in the terrace will be the real prize where, you know, there's a huge continuity. But the grades we're seeing at Edgena are absolutely fantastic. To put it in perspective, alluvial deposits around the planet, you know, they might run 0.2, 0.3 grams, many of them. Mm-hmm. And that's wildly economic for them. You know, here we are talking about, and that's per cubic meter. By the way, most alluvial deposits are measured in grams per cubic meter because if you think about it, you're really, the mining process is simply shoveling the material. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't matter if the gravel weighs 1.6 tons or 2.1 tons or whatever, but it's measured in cubic meters because, you know, the density of gravities of gravels is variable mm-hmm. over a large area, so it's easier to do.
Yeah.
But look, you know, seeing grades of a gram plus per mm-hmm. cubic meter, that's unreal. And the coarse gold, I mean, goodness, you know, it's easy to extract. It's very shallow. It will be easy to mine this. We see mining it, processing it, and reclaiming it in a very straightforward fashion, almost on a continual basis. Mm-hmm. It should be wildly economic if our hopes and dreams pan out.
Right. Well, you're talking about substantially higher grades, as you mentioned, about a gram or so per cubic meter in an area that you think might not even be the most the richest, and comparing to 0.2 or 0.3 grams per cubic meter for these kinds of deposits. So the last time we talked, you noted that there are these other areas, as you say, the hand and the fingers, and then looking down basin to the hand. You didn't have the permits yet to go to those areas that might be more highly prospective. Do you have a sense of when you might have those permits and when you might start exploring those areas?
Sure. It's partly permit, but also partly negotiation with the local Aboriginal community.
Sure.
So at Edgena Mining Lease, where we're currently focused, we did get clearance, and we announced that just a few days ago in a news release. That allows us to go ahead and continue trenching. So we have started trenching in earnest again, further east from where we did the first trench. So there'll be continuing news around that. But, you know, the greater terrace, that's the big prize, all right? We know, looking around the terrace, and it's vast, you know, the Womarina project, which is 23 kilometers due east of us, was a historic alluvial mine similar to Edgena, very similar gold, very coarse grain in thin, you know, gravels, like meter thick gravels at surface. We know that there are many such occurrences around the edge of the basin. There's probably at least a couple dozen of these sticking out. They all, in my view, like I said, coalesce. They're basically the fingers, and then they'll coalesce into the hand down in the terrace. Very good, you know, geophysical evidence for that. We have the ground penetrating radar and stuff to identify these swales and channels and stuff. As far as timing for the access, we have to think of this as a holistic project. Okay, we want to get access to the entire area. So we're building a relation with the Aboriginal community. I think having them come out and work with us for 10 days was an extraordinary opportunity to build some relations there. We are aiming for a much more expansive agreement with the community. I think there's ways that the two can work together. And, you know, that's our ultimate goal. Permitting is fairly straightforward for a project like this. We don't see any hang-ups there. It's more to do about, working with our friends here at Carriera and making this project go.
Mm-hmm. Quentin, ever since I've learned to know you, you've been one of the thinks outside of the box. In fact, your discovery of this area, it occurred because you think outside the box. How was the Great Whitwaters Ran deposited, and it led you to the Western Australia, to this great basin where you're working But you've always been, you know, in terms of how to mine, this is a very unusual. These are very unusual deposits, as you pointed out numerous times on this show. You are using some new technologies, some technological innovations to help you find and pinpoint where the deposits lie, where the higher grade stuff might lie, and how to actually mine this, because it's so unusual. Can you talk just a little bit about some of the technological innovations?
I think it's the most exciting aspect of this project. You know, the nature of the deposit is important, but the technologies that we're exploring right now to utilize for not only for exploration but for, you know, mining and recovery of gold are really interesting. It's a lot of fun. The ground penetrating radar gives us a very good handle on where the little depressions are. That, you know, think of them as channels or small valleys where the gold seems to accumulate. That's great. You know, now we have a targeting tool. The next thing, you know, mining this thing. Look, we're looking into various scenarios of continuous miners. The gravels are loose, so it's very easy to dig them up. You know, most alluvial operations use conventional shovels, and then they put it in a truck, haul it to a plant, wash it in the plant, and then they have to bring the dirt back and reclaim. You know, it's a long process. But we actually see a scenario where we're mining and processing, you know, continually right at site, right at the spot where we're digging up the gravel. So we're looking at continuous mining scenarios. We're looking at continuous reclamation scenarios, including revegetation scenarios. Hmm. We're looking at things like this eddy current separator and other dry techniques that we can use for processing. You know, we don't have to bring in a huge amount of water, have reservoirs available, you know, to process. There's ways to do this very cheaply and very effectively, and it's all due to the nature of the deposit itself.
It's fascinating. Really a very interesting story to keep our eyes on. What do investors really need to, I mean, how much more work and when might we start to get a sense of what the economics of this project is? I understand you're trying to, you know, to look at the big picture and prepare and do this thing right, and we're thankful for that. But a lot of us are kind of impatient. We'd like to know, okay, Quentin, when can you deliver us some real, you know, some real profits here on this company?
Okay, so let's look at the way forward with Edna. It's not a conventional deposit, as I've discussed. It's really one that we're going to advance, you know, almost on several tracks at once. You've got exploration. You've got all of these technologies that we're looking at, you know, in terms of mining and processing. We have to advance all of that at once. And that also includes, you know, working with the Aboriginals and working with the government on how you go about permitting, an expansive alluvial system like this. But, you know, look, what it boils down to is it's simple, okay? It's not deep in the ground. It doesn't require a large open pit. This is something that you can actually test mine and move forward fairly quickly. So we envision taking this in stages. The first stage we're undertaking right now mainly focused on exploration. You know, we're trying to figure out ways to define the actual deposit itself and quantify grade. I think our recent trench and bulk sampling work was very effective at doing that. But then we can quickly move that, and when I say quickly, you know, within a year, to trial mining and experimenting with these techniques as well as recoveries. And, you know, with luck, we could potentially bootstrap this within a couple of years straight into production, you know, at a commercial level. I mean, this is as fast as it goes in mining these days. A conventional gold mine from discovery to production might take 10 years.
Yeah, exactly.
That's just the way it is.
Yeah.
Okay, so this is, in you know, comparison, this can go at light speed. You know, not to say that I can guarantee anything.
Yeah.
But that's how we see it. Now, we are working on, you know, conceptual economic numbers. I cannot, you know, 43-101 regulations are there for a reason. I can't just spout, you know, wild numbers. But, you know, think about it for a minute. Okay, we're talking about mining gravels that are basically right at surface.
At surface, yeah.
We're also talking about very cheap reclamation. We're not filling in a 3,000-meter wide pit or something. We're basically backfilling where we just dug, okay?
Yeah.
These are cheap processes. Recovery. If we get a dry process scheme that's quick and cheap, that can be done on a continuing basis, like this eddy current separator, say, mm-hmm. That's also very cheap. Okay, so, you know, what are the numbers? I don't know, but I mean,
yeah.
You know, they could be, you know, on the order of a few dollars, maybe $10, $20 per cubic meter.
Yeah.
You know? And that's Australian dollars. So,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. Well, it's very exciting, and I think that the thing that should not be lost on people is the scale of this, Quentin. And, you know, I mean, if it was just a small deposit, I couldn't get terribly excited about it, you know, probably. But if you have millions of ounces potentially, you know, it starts to become real and very, very important to the markets.
Yes. It does, and bear this in mind. If we do have a system that's as expansive as this, we don't have to just start at one end of mine to the other. You can actually set up multiple operations over an area. Okay, it's not something you have to pick at from one end, you know, 100 years later pop up on the other. You could actually put mines in various locations, all in simultaneous operation.
All right, it's just in summing up then, what are the drivers that investors should really be focused on and be on the lookout for?
Yeah, the news from Edgina will be about trenching bulk sampling over the next few months. But we're also going to have a lot of news around the innovative technologies we're looking at. This Eddie Kind separator news that we've just released is part of that. We're also going to have updates as far as, you know, advancement with heritage and so forth. We do look forward to working with the Aboriginals. And as I said, that's a key aspect of this project. I would say, you know, look for those stages. We're going through the exploration stage now, kind of the initial investigation into techniques. And then, you know, trial mining, things like that will come, you know, a few months later. It is a project we can move forward quickly. So I anticipate a steady ability to provide a steady flow of updates around the project. Now, I don't want people to forget about Beaton's Creek. It's ready. It's mined. It's got a large resource, or it's mineable. It's got a large resource. It's basically permitted, and, you know, we'll call it shovel ready, for lack of a better term. Okay, that is a project we're looking at very hard, how we advance it at the moment. I'll leave it at that. We're looking at taking Karratha through the same process we did with Beaton's Creek, you know, test mining, things like that. We have not forgotten about those. There's work that we're doing in the background. It's not quite as flashy as people might want to hear, but we're diligently working away as well as exploring. We've got two teams out in the field right now. They're investigating our 13,000 square kilometer tenement package. And we're trying to stir up even more discoveries.
Yeah. Well, and so we could anytime possibly hear some news from Beaton's Creek, I suppose. That's another possibility. And as far as financing goes, Quentin, I understand that you're in pretty good shape now with Sumitomo helping to finance the costs of exploring and developing over at Edgina, right?
Correct. We have about $41 million in the bank. But because Sumitomo is paying effectively all the bills at Edgina, it's helped cut our burn rate back. We've focused our burn rate mainly on exploration, and it's really going to help us get to the finish line with these projects. It also provides technical support for us, because the team from Sumitomo is equally motivated. The visions are aligned, and they have very smart people working in our midst.
Very good. Excellent. Well, thank you so much, Quentin, for spending time with us again. Very exciting story, and we'll certainly want to keep our listeners and my subscribers up to date on an ongoing basis. So I'm really grateful to you for spending time with us again.
Sure thing, Jay.